real work. So far, there's been sort of grading and that kind of stuff going on. Construction, real work would start in mid-June. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce Linda Laviolette, the very, very capable executive director of Portland Parks Foundation.
Thank you, Zeri, for your kind words, and good morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. Needless to say, today we are very pleased. I'm here to represent the Portland Parks Foundation, and I'm very pleased that a number of our board and leadership council members have joined us as we're here to celebrate a wonderful new donor to our city in terms of making parks possible. As you know, it is our role at the foundation to engage private citizens, businesses, and local foundations to support our amazing park system. People all over the country and the world come here to appreciate our system. We show it off, we're proud of it, and yet we know that there are needs and there are deficiencies in the system, and particularly the future, the vision. I think, Dan, we are the right act to follow all those incredible kids, because the reason the foundation exists, the reason that our donor has made this incredible gift, is the future. It is those kids. It's the world they will inhabit, as well as some of us getting older in it and enjoying it too. We are celebrating another collaborative partnership with the Parks Bureau and the city. We work very closely together. It is indeed a pleasure to work with Zeri and her staff. We are here because one of Portland's leading citizens has followed a proud Portland tradition of contributing to his community by making a park possible. Some that came before him were families like the Terwilligers, the Bensons, and the McClays, all park names you recognize. Those families made those parks possible by their donations. And now we have to add to that roster citizens like Tom Moyer and Jordan Schnitzer. I will be calling up Jordan at the end of my remarks for him to propose a name for the park. Right now, I want to tell you a little bit, and hopefully briefly, how that happened. Last year, the city, in fact, was running out of time on having full funding for the incredible vision of South Park Block 5. I wanted to help, the foundation wanted to help, and I actually called on just the right person to make that first move. Kelsey Green Grout, and has she arrived?
Yes, there she is.
I knew who to call on the board and said, Kelsey, I need you to do something immediately. Who can you call and get to right away? And she did immediately go to one of her old friends, Jordan Schnitzer, and asked him to help create this world-class park in downtown Portland. He said an emphatic yes to over $1.5 million. He said that in what I would guess is record time for any solicitation for a capital campaign. He did that. He responded that way because he was also very excited about the vision of this park. Jordan understands the importance of beautiful and inspiring places in our downtowns, the importance they are to the vitality of our cities. There are many parks in this city that make us one of the most livable cities in America. He understands the importance of a community gathering place. And in this case, it'll be one during the day and in the evening, because it's going to be beautiful in the evening as well, right in the heart of our cultural district. Well, I knew he was really on board with the vision of this park, and that helped give me the chutzpah to go back to him and say, we need more money to complete the park as envisioned. His second major gift allows a very special water feature to remain a part of this unique park. He helped to make the dream a reality and has become a nearly $2 million donor to the Portland Parks Foundation. His family's generosity in our city and state is well known. Jordan has taken his family's tradition and made it his own. His civic-mindedness, his investments in projects for the public good in Portland and all over the state are truly inspiring. His personal service to our city and our state are formidable. It's a very long list, and I'm only going to mention a few highlights. He served 20 years on the board of the Japanese Garden, so he is not a newcomer to the importance of beautiful parks in downtown. He also served 20 years on the Friends of Astoria column, 7 years on the Portland Art Museum Board, and 7 years on the Temple Beth Israel Board. He served on the city's light rail transit committee, among other city entities. Of course, he has a long list of honors and awards. I'm only going to mention a couple. In 2006, he received the University of Oregon's Presidential Medal, and in 2003, the State of Oregon Governor's Arts Award. It's my pleasure to introduce Jordan Schnitzer, as I mentioned before, to propose a name of the park. It's not only Jordan's financial support of this project that is huge. It is also his passion for beauty and his desire to have all benefit from beauty in their lives. His desire to give back to his community. These are among the things that drive his extraordinary generosity for this project.
Thank you, Linda. Sorry, and Mayor Potter and council members. Having grown up in this community, I'm sure all of you have appreciated how lucky we are to have the parks. The vision of the founders of this community was so insightful. And we have offices up down the West Coast, and how often I think if there had just been community-spirited people in many of those communities that had the vision that our founding fathers and mothers did, how lucky those communities would be. Last weekend, I went out and took my girls to the Rhododendron Gardens and fed the ducks. Growing up, I remember going up to Council Crest Park and Laurelhurst Park and Chapman Park, and I remember when we discovered the little Johnson Creek Park over in Milwaukee when I was driving and take friends over there and walk in the little stream in the summer. Later, when I started running so much, Forest Park was such a refuge and a place for reflection and contemplative times. Integral to my experience of being a native-born citizen here are the parks, and they mean so much. When Pioneer Park was created downtown, it was a wonderful addition to the city, and people like Bill Roberts and others who followed the initial founders of the city had that same vision. So when Kelsey Green Grout, who I grew up with and admire so much, came to me and said the city was in trouble and had to move quickly on this money, it was certainly something that came to mind, and I wanted to give back as much as others had given back to me and helped my experiences growing up, and I wanted to help ensure that other people, especially young people, would continue to enjoy the parks as much as I had. What I'd like to suggest that the name I'd like to propose is in honor of my grandparents, Simon and Helen Director. And this builds upon the legacy of those founding names in the community of Pettigrove and Failing and Corbett and others. And my grandparents were part of that generation of immigrants that came over in the early part of the last century. And while they're awfully important to me, they're no more important than any of your ancestors were to you and the grandparents of everyone in this room and all the citizens in Portland. And just as we owe so much to the founding fathers of the community, I certainly owe so much to my grandparents and my parents. And in that way, I wanted to read what I wrote about them, because what I would hope is while this talks about my grandparents, I'm sure that for all of us in this room and all the citizens that I hope will use this park, they will really feel it's theirs because it's honoring their ancestors as much as I'm honoring mine. My grandfather, Simon Director, was born in Shetrisk, a small village in southwest Russia, in 1891. He arrived in Portland in 1910 and began work as a butcher. My grandmother, Helen Holtzman, was born in Warsaw, Poland, in 1900 and arrived in Portland in 1916. That same year, she and my grandfather met and were married. As an aside, they met at a party, and he walked her around the block for 20 minutes and proposed. They had three daughters, June, Ruth, and my mother, Arlene. And I'm pleased that my cousin, Courtney, who is a great-granddaughter, is here. She is Ruth's granddaughter and great-granddaughter of Simon and Helen Director. In 1921, my grandfather bought the first of what was to be a chain of variety stores located in Astoria, Portland, Salem, Eugene, The Dalles, Vancouver, Longview, Spokane, and Walla Walla. In the early 1930s, he bought a large downtown Portland business, Jennings Furniture Company, which he and my grandmother operated for many years. After selling the stores, he bought several office buildings in downtown Portland. My grandparents were part of a generation of immigrants who came to Portland and worked hard paving the way for their children, grandchildren, and generations to come. By serving their community and acting as role models, they helped make our community the wonderful place to live that it is today. Therefore, I propose this park is named the Simon and Helen Director Park to honor my grandparents and to honor their generation who did so much for all of us. We hope that our children, their children, and those who follow will remember and honor their ancestors by continuing to make our community a welcoming, wonderful place. And I have some pictures that I'll pass around that are obviously meaningful to me, but they are pictures of my... let me approach you. Thank you. I applaud the efforts. Charles Jordan has done such a good job with the parks, the measures the community has passed over the years to continue to acquire important open spaces, and it's really a credit to us. It's certainly easy to look at our shortcomings of all the things that any of us always feel are important for a community to do. But the area of parks, we've got to pat ourselves on the back. We inherited a wonderful park system. It's continued to be maintained, and we hope that this park continues to attract and excite and energize the downtown and continues to be a wonderful legacy of all of us of this generation. One also may ask why I wanted the gift initially to be anonymous, and that was to really in respect to Mr. Moyer, who without his initial funding of this, this park wouldn't be a reality today. And I wanted to make sure that when he had the announcement of his new building that none of this would detract from the wonderful role that he's played. And certainly at his age in the mid-80s, he's one of those people like my grandparents who've done a lot for our community. So I appreciated your forbearance. And while we worked with Commissioner Saltzman, we asked that would be anonymous till Mr. Moyer's day in the sun and his building was announced and so forth. Also, I've had a chance to meet with the architect, landscape architect, Lori Olin, and I think the judgment of the Parks Department and the Parks Foundation in retaining him with his world-class vision and ideas. It was exciting to see the plans that he's come up with, and I'm glad, even with a little bit more money, that we're continuing to follow his instructions to make this an absolutely world-class public place. So we appreciate your consideration, and thank you for giving me and our family an opportunity to give back in this way.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for a very generous contribution that's going to ensure we have a world-class new park. Really appreciate it.
I want to add my 2 cents on that as well, and I particularly can identify with your grandparents, as they, change the name. Those could be my grandparents too, in terms of where they came from and how they met and how they grew to love Portland. So it'll be a very fitting tribute, as you said, to everybody who honors their ancestors. Thank you, Jordan.
Yeah, good.
Thank you, Jordan.
Appreciate it.
Is there a sign-up sheet to testify?
There was. I did not have anyone sign up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? This is a report, and I need a motion to accept.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Thanks, everybody. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I want to particularly acknowledge Jordan Schnitzer's remarks, I'm particularly impressed that he chose his grandparents to recommend the naming after. I think that's as Commissioner Saltzman said, something a lot of us really identify with, our ancestors who actually paved the way for us here, and appreciate so much his commitment to our community, his lasting commitment, and his family's. So I'm very pleased to support this. Aye.
Thank you. Saltzman.
Well, again, I also want to recognize the tremendous work of the Parks Foundation members, many of whom were here, are still here. And I want to thank Linda and, you know, most of all, Jordan for helping to make this vision of a great park truly become that with the assistance of this generous donation. Aye.
Potter.
And I, too, want to congratulate and thank Jordan Schnitzer and his family for their very generous donation to help complete this beautiful park, this little oasis in downtown Portland. I think we have a lot to be thankful for in our city in terms of the people who volunteer their time and their efforts, all the way from earlier this morning listening to the city employees that work out at Mill Park Elementary School, to the fine folks who serve on the Parks Board and make sure that our parks not only are open, but clean, acceptable, and building for the future. So I want to thank all of you for your kind and generous efforts. And again, thank you, Jordan. I appreciate that. Aye. Thank you, folks.
Shoshana, where'd you go? Shoshana, are you nearby? Craig, could you run the machine for me? So I'm introduce the go ahead.
Item 543, authorize the Portland Office of Transportation to enter into a contract with Max J. Cooney Construction, owner of the Old Sauvie Island Bridge, to rehabilitate, relocate, and acquire the Old Sauvie Island Bridge center span for the purpose of moving it to Northwest Flanders Street over I-405. Okay.
Take a minute.
Yeah.
Sam,
All right, we're getting organized. We're actually running a little ahead of schedule. So, I'm here again today as Portland's transportation commissioner with another non-controversial, non-complicated, low-profile project. I ran for a city commissioner to be appointed the transportation commissioner to improve the basic services, transportation services of the city. And with three outside audits, new leadership in almost every senior position at PDOT, and a doubling of general fund investment in PDOT, we are at least holding our own in many ways, if not making a better bureau. This is a really good Knicks line, so I want to make sure you get it. It's all right. All right. Almost like a ballet, really. And I'm arts commissioner, too. These folks have worked really hard on this, so. And look, we start talking about transportation and half the council leaves, so.
I'm here.
I know. Half the council is still here. Half is left. Half is still here. Since being transportation commissioner, my pet project has been to save lives. Save lives on a system that unnecessarily kills and injures users of the system, unnecessarily because this system has been starved of funding for over 2.5 decades. It is antiquated. It is not signaled. It has not been maintained to carry the volume of traffic, the multimodal nature of the traffic that it now carries. There are those that object to the project we're going to hear about today, that it is not needed, that there are other higher priority safety projects in the city. It is a concern based on fairness and equity. Fairness and equity is the criteria that I have to use every day as transportation commissioner because there is not enough resources to say yes to all the worthy projects or even the priority projects that will save money and save lives. It is a gruesome task for acting as your transportation commissioner. It is a gruesome task for the city council where we have to decide where to make investments, not where people are being killed or injured, but where the most people are being killed and the most people are being injured. But my approach has always been one based on fact, to invest in those areas that are killing the most people, injuring the most people. I assume the objections to this proposal are made with good intentions and a desire to make fact-based decisions, fact-based transportation spending decisions, again, to save the most lives where the most lives are being lost and to reduce the most injuries where the most injuries are occurring. Based on some of the statements that I have read and watched in the media, I would have voted against this project as well. So I welcome today's hearing as an opportunity to get the facts out and to answer any questions, and I ask for your patience as we do this because transportation funding, transportation projects are complicated. So having said that, we'll go through a brief presentation. All right. Flanders Street crossing. The purpose is to save money, save lives, and help save our environment. This particular project is part of an overall effort to expand Portland's Bicycle Boulevard. So we're looking at one piece. The Springwater Trail bridges were another piece. The Gibb Street Bridge over I-5 connecting the Southwest Hills to the river are other pieces. We have built a number of bridges over the past 3 years to build this, to help build this network of bicycle and pedestrian boulevards. Why this project? As I mentioned, it's part of a citywide strategy for reducing conflict between pedestrians, cyclists, and vehicles. And in our recent polling for the Safe, Sound, and Green Street Initiative, reducing the conflict between cars and bicyclists came up as the third most desired investment that Portlanders wanted us to make. The city is responsible for providing pedestrian and bicycle access through the city. That responsibility is largely carried out through transportation and also parks. We, of course, build this network one project at a time. The CIP for transportation and trails between 05-06 and 08-09 is $288 million, derived from a variety of sources, mostly from state and federal funding. This is the capital improvement program, and you have this map before you on the dais. I'm sorry it's so small. We also have the map over here. Is that right? Which the audience cannot see. But between, you can see in terms of where the money has gone, we've had a total of $288 million to spend from a variety of sources. Central Northeast Neighbors, CNN, $27 million. East Portland Neighborhood, $18 million. Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, about $3 million. North Portland, about $38 million. Neighbors West Northwest, $5 million. Southeast Uplift Area, with a lot of investment in the Springwater Trail, including three new bridges, $121 million, Southwest Neighbors, $61 million, and then projects that sort of don't get into any particular category, that's $12 million. So $288 million in a variety of capital projects around the city, some intended for automobiles, some intended for trails and pedestrian and bikes. When I said transportation was my number one priority, it began from day one. We held the city's first transportation safety summit. We've had two since then, bicycle safety workshops in each coalition district. We secured local and federal funding to serve 25 schools with Safe Routes to Schools program. We've improved our photo radar with the police bureau and school zones. We have a new drunk driving task force. We partnered with ODOT to develop a safety pedestrian program. In cooperation with the police, we've conducted over 40 pedestrian crosswalk stings with a focus on schools and senior centers, and we established Safe Routes to Senior Center program at 10 senior centers. These are Portland's most dangerous intersections, and you can see them on this map over here. Council has a map in front of them. In terms of bicycle, reported bicycle and pedestrian crashes between 1997 and 2006, you can see from the purple lines that the most dangerous corridors in the city, and that's what you have to look at because they operate as a corridor, is 122nd Avenue, sort of the cross of 82nd Avenue and East Foster and then West Burnside. We use a number of factors to identify most dangerous intersections: crash rate per entering vehicles, total number of crashes, total number of injuries and fatalities, and the value of the crash rate. You can't just look at automobiles when trying to determine the most dangerous intersections in the city. And I know there was some information in the Oregonian talking about the top 10 most dangerous intersections. That was based only on automobiles. We've mentioned this. So when you look at the numbers, and again, I want to focus from all of our work in the community, the transportation safety summits, we've really done new analysis in the last 3 years to really hone in with the most accurate understanding of the most dangerous corridors for pedestrians and cyclists. And as you can see in terms of pedestrian crashes, the Burnside-Everett-Gleason corridor with 211 is the most dangerous, followed by 82nd Avenue at 184, and then about tied with Outer Foster at 71 and 122nd with 72 pedestrian crashes. You can see from the fatalities that Burnside and 82nd Avenue are by far the most dangerous place for pedestrians in terms of fatalities and in terms of crashes. And in terms of cyclist crashes, Burnside is about equal with 82nd Avenue, and in terms of fatalities, Outer Foster and Burnside are the most dangerous corridors in the city for cyclists. This city council has, at our request, at my request and PDOT's request, provided one-time general funds to prioritize high crash improvements at high crash corridors, and you can go online to check out what we did at what we are doing or have done at specific intersections. So we made sure when we came to council that we told folks what the problem was exactly at a particular intersection and what the money would be used for, whether it's new lights, whether it's new pedestrian refuge islands. We tried to be very project specific. That's the 11.6 I just mentioned. And these are some of the specific things that we've done around the city with that money. In terms of where it went, this we already went over. Between 1997 and 2006, collision reports, again, 89 injury collisions, 29 bike injury collisions, 5 pedestrian fatalities. The most tragic, I don't know about most tragic, the most recent happened last October at 14th and Burnside. This shows you in greater detail reported bicycle and pedestrian crashes. You can see it right here on this map as well, in terms of where they occur. The Flanders Crossing saves lives and reduces injuries. It does that by reducing the conflict between motorists and bicyclists and pedestrians that is currently occurring on Gleason, Everett, and Burnside. It also has the added benefit, given our values of trying to address global warming, given the fact that Portlanders, Oregonians, and the average households in the United States are spending more money on transportation-related costs every month than they're spending on food. It also gives a safer option for folks in Northwest Portland to daily commute. And the Flanders Street crossing, based on our experience in other parts of the city, is likely to increase daily bike trips by 2,400 to 4,500, up from the 800 that we have today at Everett, Gleason, and Cooch. The improved pedestrian environment will significantly increase walking trips and safety, and the positive impacts for the business community, commuters, and the neighborhood residents are obvious. How does the crossing get built? Unlike the tram, unlike a lot of other construction projects in the city, 3.913 is the guaranteed maximum price to deconstruct the center span from its current location, barge the span upriver to the Willamette to Port Dock 2. At T2, remove the lead paint, which is the liability of the contractor, by scraping the paint and repainting the bridge, and then move the span on land from Terminal 2 to Northwest Flanders Street and install it for use. So from the deconstruction to the removal of the liability of the lead paint, actually placing it in to the location, that's all on the risk and the back of the contractor. If the bridge falls over, if the bridge sinks, it's the contractor that's going to have to pay. If any of these tasks go over the $3.9 million, the contractor eats it. Phase 2 is a competitive bid to prepare the site, the pilings on either side of the freeway, to construct the bridge foundations, and to install the traffic signals. That'll be competitive bid at the lowest bid cost. This is where the money comes from. Transportation SDCs are one-time fees assessed on new development and changes in use. These funds are only available for capacity-increasing projects and not maintenance. With extensive public input, the city has identified a list of growth-oriented multimodal transportation projects. The Northwest Flanders Bike Boulevard is one of the 43 projects on the SDC funding list at $2 million. River District Urban Renewal Area, $2 million contributions. Tax increment funds are collected from properties within the River District and are only available for projects within the district. Pearl District Neighborhood Association, which acts as the Tax Increment Advisory Committee for the River District, is supportive of this project. In fact, it was their idea to address the safety issues in the corridor in which they live. The Federal Transportation Enhancements Funds of $1 million, the Transportation Enhancement Program provides federal transportation funds for projects statewide that strengthen the culture, aesthetic, and environmental value of our transportation system. It is a dedicated fund to those tasks. And then the Safe, Sound, and Green Street Program funds, we asked for $4 million in this budget. And it includes this project as part of the budget request. Question is, and a good question, if a new bridge costs $3.5 million today, why spend another $2 million more on this bridge? The considerations, it would be at least 5 years before an alternative bridge could be built due to planning and engineering requirements. With no engineering completed, the $3.5 million is a low-confidence cost estimate subject to inflation every year We delay the projects, and the cost for a new bridge will only go up due to inflation between 2004 and 2007. For example, paving costs increased 55%. The Daily Journal of Commerce recently reported that construction materials rise at about a 6.5 this year over last, and diesel prices have jumped 61%, and steel mill products rose about 8.2%. Material costs were the highest for street and highway construction, rising over 12.8% over the past year. What's the schedule? Bridge demolition occurs in June, July, and there is a permit granted by the state and federal government that the bridge can only be deconstructed during the summer months. Lead paint will be removed during July and September, finalized plans for the foundations, construction bids, and then placement of the bridge in spring of 09. We've had a number of frequently asked questions, and we'll try to go through those very quickly. Isn't council considering asking voters to approve a $450 million fee to pay for basic maintenance for our crumbling streets? Why do this project? An important part of the Safe, Sound, and Green Street proposal is safety. And like the Flanders Crossing project, the Safe, Sound, and Green Street proposal includes an expansion by 110 miles of bike boulevards. It is called Safe, Sound, and Green, and the safe is there in the first position. Portland's maintenance backlog is significant and grows by $9 million every year due to inflation alone. So if we can do these projects sooner, we should. It'll save money. DOTA transportation priorities start in East Portland. As council approved earlier this year, the citywide SDC plan that included the Flanders Street Bridge as one of the projects eligible for transportation SDCs, as you can see, 76% of one-time funds for high crash locations occurred east of 72nd, Powell and Foster, 73% of one-time funds for pedestrian and safety projects, 4 out of 5 new red light cameras as part of the one-time general fund are being installed east of 82nd, $1.5 million spent on signal safety projects on 122nd, and 100% of the one-time funds from the $11.6 million are being used in East Portland for ADA curb ramps. 82nd Avenue is a safety priority. That's where the first new money in terms of the most dangerous corridors in the city. That's why the first money that I received went there. We're working with ODOT to try to double the money, double the number of improvements on 82nd Avenue. We're working with ODOT to develop a comprehensive safety package. As I mentioned, the safety project will serve 82nd Avenue in its entirety within the city of Portland, and we've had a number of open houses, community input to help us tailor that. Why do you spend so much money on bikes? I get this question a lot at the public town halls. In terms of the capital improvement budget, we spend 0.7% of PDOT's capital budget on cycling improvements, and yet we get a great dividend from this modest investment in terms of 6% of Portlanders use bikes as a primary commute vehicle and another 10% cycle as their secondary commute. So for a very, very small investment, we get a very, very large utilization by bikes. The payoff is huge, not just in terms of air quality or traffic congestion. It's also good in terms of public health and the civic pocketbook. Why do we need another bridge when there's already one on each side of the proposed bridge at Gleason and at Everett? What's wrong with those bridges? This is a high-conflict corridor for pedestrians and cyclists, and as you can see best on here with all the freeway on-ramp and off-ramps outlined, we have 2 freeway off-ramps, 2 freeway on-ramps, a high-conflict interchange, over 200 motor vehicle injury collisions in the area, unsafe for vehicles, pedestrians, and bikes without an alternative to using the existing crossings. Everett and Gleason also pose challenges for pedestrians in terms of narrow sidewalks and missing sidewalks on the I-405 overpasses. Everett currently has a 7-foot-wide sidewalk on the south side, none on the north side. Gleason has a 7-foot-wide sidewalk on the north side, none on the south side, and all the crosswalks mix with freeway on-ramp and off-ramp traffic. The streets of Everett and Gleason themselves on either side of the I-405 ditch also pose significant challenges for cyclists. We have high average daily traffic volumes. Everett, west of 13th, has 12,000 vehicles Gleason East of 13th has 11,000 vehicles. The bike lanes recommended in the TSP from 2nd to 24th, but they only exist between 14th and 19th, where the street widens due to I-45. Adding more bike lanes on these streets would require either removal of travel lanes or removal of on-street parking. If crossing at Everett or Gleason isn't good, why can't cyclists and pedestrians just cross underneath the freeway at Johnson? Well, for someone walking or bicycling on Gleason and Everett, using Johnson would mean traveling an extra 6 to 10 blocks. They don't do it now, and unless we fence off those intersections, they won't do it in the future. Crash data from Burnside, Everett, and Gleason show that cyclists are more likely to stay on the high-conflict streets rather than divert to other streets. In other words, if the status quo was working, this wouldn't be one of the most dangerous corridors in the city. Aren't the 10 most dangerous intersections all in East Portland? For autos, 9 of the 10 top 10 most dangerous intersections are on 82nd Avenue or east of 82nd Avenue, and that's why we've invested the money, the one-time money, in improving these safety. So these are injury-involved reported crashes for automobiles only. Aren't the 10 most dangerous intersections? And there it is again. In terms of pedestrians, though, the top 10 list includes intersections in nearly every district in the city. As you can see, it includes in Southeast, it includes on 4th Avenue at Burnside, my neighborhood in North Portland, a series of streets in Southeast, going further out, Northwest 6th, Northwest 3rd, Northwest 2nd, those are all in the Burnside, Everett, Gleason corridor. In terms of cyclists, the most dangerous intersections in terms of cyclists, Southwest 69th, Garden Home Road. Anyone who lives in that area intuitively knows that. I-5 freeway southbound at North Broadway. Again, this is for cyclists, Northeast Broadway and Grand, North Broadway and North Flint, Southeast 72nd, 82nd, North Going, Northeast Fremont, Southeast 26th, and Southeast 122nd. Doesn't Coley need sidewalks? Isn't it unsafe? My answer is yes, and that's why from the first days of my assignment as transportation commissioner, I have fought for funding for Coley. Transportation SDCs, it's on the project list at $1.1 million. OTIA money, $2.8 million, which is state money. MTIP money, which is federal money. I asked for, Jim Francesconi asked for 2.2. We were awarded 793,000. MTIP money requested 2.4. In 06, I asked for general fund resources for Coley Boulevard. Requested $4 million. It was rejected. I received $275 million. In 06, I was able to secure $1.6 million for the project.
$75,000.
Thank you. And in 07, I asked for one-time money, and the mayor and I agreed that it should be deferred to this year because we couldn't spend the 1.6 last year. I asked again for 1.6, and it has shown up in the mayor's proposed budget. The project planning started in 07, and construction is scheduled for 010. Doesn't Coley need sidewalks? Isn't it unsafe? Again, my answer is yes for a variety of reasons, but when you look at the data, pedestrian crashes, pedestrian fatalities, cyclist crashes, and cyclist fatalities, this is what we're looking at. What is the Coley Boulevard project? It is a Green Street project, and it is the main street in the Coley neighborhood. They deserve to have a safe, they deserve to have a beautiful main street in one of the poorer sections of Portland that has long been neglected by the city. Aren't there hundreds of other projects elsewhere that could use the SDC funds from this project? There are actually only 43 projects that are slated to be partially funded by SDCs. This was on the list when the City Council approved the entire list. Transportation SDCs, again, are assessed on new development and changes in use, and every district in the city has multiple projects on the SDC list. $1.1 million of SDC funds have been budgeted for the Coley project, for instance. Why aren't we investing 5.5 for a bridge on Flanders if it isn't on the list of most dangerous intersections? This one is interesting. Northwest Flanders is designated to be a bike boulevard, and so it would make sense that already without significant improvements. It is a low-volume, family-friendly bicycle and pedestrian street. It is a safe alternative for people who want to walk or bike across the I-405 ditch. This is the reasoning behind choosing Flanders. Why not build a 15-foot bridge? It's a great question. 15 feet for about 15, 20 years was sort of the old standard for pedestrian and bike bridges. What we found out, though, by making some changes here in Portland is that you get a lot more traffic in terms of cyclists and pedestrians by expanding the actual pedestrian and cyclist roadway. For example, the $23 million retrofit of the Hawthorne Bridge included expanding the sidewalks, the pedestrian way and bikeways, and we saw a doubling of its utilization. There is fundraising underway with this project. It is not enough to fill the gap, but it is enough to make sure that the lighting is adequate on the bridge, and we're continuing to pursue that. This project did not come from City Council, did not come from me. It was one of the projects I inherited, and I put it through its paces in terms of, is this really a good project? But it's supported by the business associations and the neighborhood associations in the area. And again, it's a project that was first put forward about 6 years ago. In terms of exactly when, in 2002, the Burnside Transportation Urban Design Plan, 2007, with the current membership of this City Council, Transportation System Plan Update, it was approved. Transportation System Development Charge Project List, it was approved. And just recently, the Council commissioned a feasibility study to look at the reuse of the Sabe Island Bridge. One suggestion was to build the Southeast Spokane Bike Boulevard projects or the 20s Bike Boulevard projects. I will be the second vote on council to move these projects forward in this budget process. This shows you, though, in terms of, again, we don't have the, I don't have the luxury due to inadequate resources of placing improvements everywhere people are killed or injured. We have to look at where most of the people are killed, most of the people are injured. These are very worthy projects, but in terms of where they rank with the three quarters we identified, they are more safe than the three quarters we've been working on in the last 3 years. Why don't we focus on bike projects that the community has been waiting for and that meet immediate safety needs before we build a new bridge on I-405? Again, the community has been waiting for this since 2002. This is a high conflict corridor, and again, it's where most people in the city are getting killed and injured. This shows you the bikeway miles citywide. East Portland has the most miles of developed bikeways in the city. Northwest Portland has the least. Most world-class bike city friendlies have the densest web of bikeways closer you get to the town centers. We've intentionally, though, worked on East Portland for bikeways because it has been ignored by the city for a long time and because of the deaths and injuries out there. Does saving the bridge reduce carbon emissions? The answer is yes, about 1.6 million pounds of CO2. That's equal to for the average home, avoiding the CO2 emissions for about 130 homes, in addition to the connection on either side of the ditch. How does reuse support state and local efforts to reduce carbon? It is very consistent with our overall efforts. Shouldn't Portlanders support fairness and equity first when it comes to making transportation choices? As I said in my introduction, the answer is absolutely yes. And we focused first on parts of town that have long been ignored. Now we need to focus on a corridor that is killing and injuring the most people. And that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Yes, since I've got you up there. So the ordinance in front of us does now require that necessary funds for both phase one and phase two are secured before the contract is entered into with CUNY?
Correct.
So explain the timing on that part of securing the other funds from the state and PDC and, yeah, what's...
By the third week in May, PDC will have officially considered the request. We've had informal conversations with decision makers. It is on the list, the proposed list. So by the
PDC now?
Sorry, PDC.
Yeah, okay.
PDC. For the Transportation Enhancement Committee, they meet the third week in May, and they will have made their decision by then. We will not be entering into any contracts. We will not be doing work on this until we have all the money in hand.
And then I see in the item we're going to be considering in a minute about the grant to the Transportation Enhancement Fund,
mm-hmm.
that it requires a local match of $114,000 roughly.
So mm-hmm.
Where will that come from?
The $500,000 of the $5.5 will be coming from, we asked for a total of four from PDOT to move forward a variety of safety projects, including some that have been mentioned in the paper. The mayor did not propose those, but we're hopeful in the final budget negotiations that we will get more of those on the list, including the local match that you described from this budget.
So the third week in May, the transportation enhancement decision will be made? So
correct. We do the next week is what's scheduled for the approved budget for the city of Portland before we do the adopted budget in June. So I'll be using the approved budget decision of the council. I'm going to count that as having the money in hand, authorized, obviously, for release July 1st.
So the right now in the proposed budget, I believe there's $3.5 million
yes.
transportation funds.
Mm-hmm.
So would the $500,000 of Safe Sound and Green Streets come out of that? $3.5 million?
No, I propose that this would be an additional $500,000 on top of the $3.5 million. But obviously, we will have to work that out as part of the budget.
Well, yeah, I mean, what if it isn't?
Then we'll work it out.
In other words, it will come out of some general transportation revenue
correct.
Source.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks. I had a question, Commissioner, about the how it's going to be paid for. Your staff in 2006 stated in a report that unless the surrounding community was to come up with about $1.5 million, that it would not be a feasible project. And at this point, I see no private money as a source of helping complete the project. That's one question. The second question has to do with the URA saying it cannot be used outside of the URA boundaries, when in fact it's the River District that you're going to be using money from. And it's the same River District that we created a satellite URA out in East Portland to pay for David Douglas Parks. And we actually created a mechanism where we can use this in different parts of town to pay for different projects that would come from the URA. So I think it's inaccurate to say that it can only be used within the URA district itself. The third area has to do with SDCs, is that SDCs can be used anywhere in the city to pay for any project in regards to infrastructure. So those are the three areas that I'm concerned about. One was, the first is about how much citizens are going to put into this, the second to do with the URA, and then the third with SDCs.
Thank you for the questions. We considered the amount of money available to PDC for this project was the $2 million from SDCs. Which you and others on the council approved twice. In the transportation system plan, it shows up, and also in the renewal, 10-year renewal of the transportation SDC plan. So we could go back and change that, but based on existing council policy, this project was included as one of the 43 projects. We could go back and change that. In terms of urban renewal funding, the policy that we established as a council put some very strict criteria on spending for satellite efforts outside the urban renewal district. And my reading of it, no expert on it, is that we would have to amend that criteria in order for this to fit in. And the third question was, private fundraising. With the downturn in the economy, we included a contribution in our thinking. We included a contribution if the River District neighborhood wanted to, which came up with the priorities for the River District, if they wanted this project to move forward, they were going to have to prioritize it as one of their items for tax increment spending, and they can speak to why they prioritized it. Otherwise, we would not be moving forward with this specific project. That on top of, we considered that a local contribution to the effort, that on top of private fundraising. But we've never, in our thinking, relied on significant investment from private fundraising. We will use the private fundraising to make sure that the lighting on the bridge is safe and secure.
Thank you.
Just one last question. Has the I-405 Enhancement Fund, I think that's what it's called, is that a potential source of the match for the ODOT grant or the lighting or whatever?
We spent a lot of time looking into that, and in the end we concluded it has already been committed to. It is a small amount of money. It's already been committed to other neighborhood enhancement projects, and we concluded, we're happy to share the information with you, but we concluded it would not be a significant source of match that would help with getting the federal money. If there were no more questions, I think we just have a sign-up list. I don't think we had, did we have invited testimony, Shoshana?
Actually, she gave you a list here. I was actually going to speak to that. In Commissioner Adams' typical fashion, he has given a very thorough explanation of this project. I'm going to make a personal request to those that are going to come after. One of the city's longest-serving 911 dispatchers is retiring today. I had, some might think foolishly, committed to attending that beginning at noon, which is about 30 minutes from now. I'm looking at Commissioner Adams' invited testimony. It is clear by the time he's done with his own presentation, it'll be well past noon. So to the extent that people can be succinct and not repeat each other, I would appreciate it so I can honor this long-serving 911 dispatcher. Thank you.
Why don't we, if it's okay with you, Mayor, why don't we raise your hand if you oppose this project? Raise your hand if you support this project. All right. So at a minimum, you had your say of raising your hands.
I want people to be able to testify. Testify, just if, to the extent that you could just not duplicate what you've heard, I would just appreciate it. I'm going to be late. I just like not to be as late
about
as
about 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Just 1 or 2 minutes?
So, yes, we'll have folks testify, and please keep your remarks to 2 minutes.
So 2 minutes even for invited testimony. Scott Bricker, Patty Gardner, Catherine Charlo.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. My name is Scott Bricker. I'm with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. My bike ride to work this morning after dropping off my daughter at MLC on 21st and Gleason, I took Flanders. I've only been taking Flanders for a week. I've been bombing down Everett and almost getting hit for the last 2.5 years. Until I realized Flanders actually even is an option, but I couldn't cross the river and had to interact with traffic congestion. I think this is the reason why Northwest Portland has very low bicycle ridership for the density and the network of its facilities. Northwest Portland has a vacuum of bicycle facilities. This project is not just about bicycling, though. This project is a landmark project that would connect to communities that currently have very few connections. If you currently stand on 21st or 23rd and Cooch and you're shopping and you want to get to Powell's Books, you have to go all the way down to Johnson Street and back up to Burnside to get there. That issue in itself makes it either dangerous, so you have to use Burnside, or just prevents you from using non-motorized transportation sources. This project would deliver today something five times as good as what we might get in 5 or 7 years. I think that the bicycling community, we have had a lot of questions. A lot of people are questioning this project, and we have recently put up a frequently asked questions on our website, and people will have a chance to actually read about this project and understand where the funding sources come from, have come around to supporting this project. But I do think that this is something that we have to continue to talk to the community about. But within this neighborhood, there is so much support for this project, connecting the schools, the businesses, the community, that I urge you to take action today on this. One thing I wanted to note is that the Transportation Enhancements Funds, some people have been concerned about those. The program that is being applied to is a special TE discretionary account, not the normal TE account. And only high-profile projects, high-priority projects, that have that are time sensitive get be applied to this account, and the TE committee has already approved that PDOT submit a proposal. So this is not the normal transportation enhancements account that other projects are competing out of. Thank you.
So Patricia Gardner, Pearl District Neighborhood Association. I feel kind of bad because it really was our idea. We've been voting on